Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Masner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to the Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Cancer in the Workplace, Understanding Your Legal Protections. And they're going to be covered in great detail so you all know what your legal protections are in the workplace. And today's program is supported by Cigna Group, and I really want to thank them for their support of this program. And we have over 100 participants on the program today who come from all the United States, and we also have international participants from Lebanon, Uganda, and the United Kingdom. So this is indeed a global call, and we are delighted to have all of you on the call today. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Sylvia Ritchie, and Dr. Ritchie is Chief Medical Officer, West Cancer Center and Research Institute. And Dr. Ritchie will be addressing the meaning of work, talking with your healthcare team about work, managing your cancer treatments while working. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Ritchie.
Thank you, Dr. Masner. I appreciate that so very much, and thank you again for allowing me to participate in this program. You know, I think that once someone has a cancer diagnosis, there are so many questions going through their head, and really kind of how is my life going to change is one of the big questions that most patients have. When we're talking about work specifically, I think we really kind of need to think about what does work mean for me in this context of my life? What do I need to talk to my healthcare team about? And then how am I supposed to manage treatments while I'm working? You know, I think that continuing to work after a cancer diagnosis can really provide a lot of personal identity and purpose. Work can really provide a sense of normalcy and purpose after a cancer diagnosis, and many patients find that continuing to work helps them maintain their identity and gives them some sense of control over their lives that maybe they didn't have once they obtained their diagnosis. So it's really about keeping a normal routine for those for patients. You know, the other thing that obviously working does is provide financial stability. There can be quite a bit of financial toxicity after a cancer diagnosis with all of the medical bills, but work is obviously a crucial source of income, and then it's going to be essential for covering medical expenses and support that extra support that you may need while going through the diagnosis and treatment. And then the other thing that work can do, obviously, is provide a mental and emotional well-being. Most people don't associate with work with well-being. However, in this context, absolutely, it can contribute to emotional well-being because it provides a distraction from the illness and a really great platform for social interaction. Oftentimes, patients are isolated if they stay at home and don't have that social interaction, but there's a lot to be said for having a great support network and people really rallying around you when you're able to go to work. One of the most important things, though, when you talk to your healthcare team as they are developing your treatment plan, is you've got to have open communication. You need to create a plan for them, and then use support and resources that are there for you. You really need to have open and honest conversations with your healthcare team about your desire to continue working. Just, you know, when they come up with their plan, it's really important that you discuss your work responsibilities and how they can be adjusted to accommodate treatment schedules. I had one patient who was a cocktail waitress at a casino, and she said, I want to keep working. I love what I do. Am I going to be able to do this? And we absolutely came up with a work schedule. Like, she brought her work schedule, and we came up with a perfect schedule for her so that she would have downtimes that were not coinciding with her work, and she was able to continue on, and no one knew the difference. No one even had any idea that she was going through active chemotherapy treatments, and she didn't miss any work. And so it's really important that you tell your health care team what your goals are as far as your work is concerned as well. And then you want to create a personalized work plan. So you want to make sure that your healthcare team is really focusing on your treatment regimen, side effects, overall health, how you're going to feel, and then help coordinate that. Sometimes I have mothers that say, I want treatment during the week because I want to be available for my kids on the weekend, and that's when I want to feel good. Or other people that are working that say, look, I need to get through my work week and I want to be able to rest on the weekends. And so we can change days of the week and just know that there's a lot of flexibility. When you are a lot of times patients don't think there's any flexibility once a treatment plan has been developed. However, there's quite a bit, and you just need to open up and make sure your healthcare team is aware of that. And then make sure you use support and resources that exist. There are a lot of resources that support you as you're going through work. There's occupational therapists, social workers, patient navigators. And fortunately, we're going to hear from a social worker today to go into some of those details. But, you know, ask for that emotional and psychological support. Occupational therapists can actually really help with workplace adaptations and energy conservation techniques and even skill development. And obviously, your patient navigators can really help you with care coordination, education and advocate for you, and then give you guidance and support. Then when we're getting down into the details of managing cancer treatments while you're working, time management and scheduling is really important. And so you just have to make sure you are voicing to your healthcare team what you need. And don't feel afraid to ask for workplace accommodations if you need to, like modifying work hours or remote options, for example. And then self-care and monitoring. And I want to spend just a minute on this. It is really important that you focus on yourself while you're going through treatment, because this is, you have to think of it as, this is the one time we have to get it right, and you want to make sure you are focusing on you and not what others need. This is about you and getting you healthy. And don't be afraid to ask for what you need, not just in the workplace, but from your friends and support group as well. I hope those tips are helpful, and mostly it's about being an advocate for yourself and communicating with your healthcare team, and I will turn it back over to Dr. Messer.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ritchie. That was just a superb presentation, stellar. And actually, because you are the first speaker, you really set the tone for today's program, so thank you so much. I know there'll be questions to you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. Thank you. Just a wonderful presentation, a wonderful start to today's workshop. And our next speaker is Ms. Deborah Wolf, and Ms. Wolf is Senior Supervising Attorney Legal Health, New York Legal Assistance Group. She's a lawyer, and she'll be discussing Understanding Your Legal Protections in the Workplace, including Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, Family Medical Leave Act, FMLA, and Intermittent FMLA, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC, and state and local laws, disclosure and communication with the human resources supervisors and coworkers, solutions to address workplace challenges, COBRA, continuation of insurance benefits if employee ends working, disability, short-term, long-term, Social Security disability, SSD, and supplemental security income, SSI. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Wolf.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and I'm so pleased to be a part of this teleconference to discuss legal protections in the workplace. I have a lot to cover, but I'll get it done. I'm going to give an overview of the laws that protect people while still working after a cancer diagnosis, but also if they need to take a medical leave. I'll also talk about what to do if you believe you're being discriminated against at work or have to stop work due to illness. My focus will be on the federal laws that apply to all 50 states, but I do urge everyone listening to also become familiar with your state laws, as they often expand on the federal protections, and I'll give some examples as we go forward. But before I discuss the laws, I want to urge everyone, if you are working, to make sure to review the specific policies of your employer for medical leave and disability pay. Every employer should provide a summary plan description, which is a summary of company policies and benefits. And these policies have to comply with the laws I'll be discussing, but in many circumstances, they may even offer greater benefit. So I'm going to start by talking about a law that I'm sure most of you have heard of, the Americans with Disabilities Act, or as often called the ADA. This is a federal law that applies to all 50 states, to everyone who works for an employer with 15 or more employees. To be eligible for protection under the ADA, you must have a disability, which is defined as having an impairment as a result of your diagnosis that substantially limits a major life activity, such as walking, working, eating, or sleeping. The ADA has a pretty broad definition of what's considered a disability and even includes illnesses that have gone into remission, such as cancer. And cancer is covered under the law as a qualified disability in most cases. The ADA has two main benefits. The first benefit is that it requires an employer to make reasonable accommodations when requested by an employee. This allows an employee to go to human resources or their boss, if no human resources, and request a modification of their work schedule, work environment, or company policies. And what's reasonable is determined on a case-by-case basis. But the employer must grant the request unless it creates an undue hardship, which is a very tough burden for the employer to establish. And even an extra cost is not always an undue burden for the employer. Some common accommodations I've helped people set up include the following: a later work start time due to side effects of medications, a shorter work day, or even an extra break during the day to rest. I recently assisted someone in setting up a schedule that allowed her to work from home 3 days a week, but it's important to remember that you have to be able to do the essential functions of your job. So working from home may not always be an option for everyone. I know Dr. Ritchie mentioned somebody that she assisted who was a cocktail waitress. That's not the kind of job where you could get working from home as an accommodation. So it really is a case-by-case basis. A job transfer to a less strenuous position can also be an accommodation. But if there are other people waiting in line for this same position, the person requesting the accommodation doesn't get priority for the job. They have to wait until they're first in line. They don't get to jump to the front of the line because they have a disability. But there's no set list on accommodations. And I tell clients to really think about what might help them do their job. There's a terrific website called the Job Accommodation Network, which is askjan.org, and it provides detailed information and suggests common accommodations. Working from home accommodations have become more common since COVID, and people who are immune compromised can request these accommodations. But again, you have to be able to do the essential functions of your job from your home. The employer can't refuse an accommodation, but they can negotiate. They could say, you know, this isn't going to work, but let's talk about what will work for both of us. It has to be an interactive process. And if you have an accommodation in place but need something different, it's always modifiable. So the burden is on the employee to come forward and ask for the accommodation. And it's important to do this if you feel that your illness or treatment is impacting your work. And we'll talk a little bit later about discrimination, but an employee may have a legal claim against their employer if they refuse to approve a reasonable accommodation, but only if the accommodation is requested and the employer is aware of the disability. I always suggest that accommodation requests be made in writing with a letter from your doctor certifying that the accommodation is medically necessary. I always suggest that the letter specifically state that the employee is able to perform their essential job tasks. And any medical letter you provide to support your accommodation request must remain confidential and in a separate file outside of your employee file. The second ADA benefit is that the law prohibits discrimination against an employee because of a disability or perceived disability, and this includes discrimination in hiring, firing, demoting, or harassment. And if a person is able to do their job and has an accommodation, an employer can't take action that adversely affects their job, such as a termination or demotion, if the reason is based on the disability or the accommodation need. An employer can still address performance issues or other non-disability related concerns, and I'll talk a little bit more about discrimination soon. The next law I want to discuss is the Family Medical Leave Act, also called FMLA. FMLA applies to employers with 50 or more employees, and to be covered, you must have worked at your job for 12 months and for 1,250 hours in the last year. The employer gets to choose if they wanted to use a 12-month calendar year or as most do, start the 12-month clock ticking from the date that FMLA is first requested. And if an employee qualifies, they're entitled to 12 weeks of job-protected leave every 12 months. FMLA leave is unpaid but can be supplemented with sick time or short-term disability or even long-term disability. Employee benefits such as health insurance must continue for 12 weeks, although you must continue to pay any contribution made for the premiums. FMLA also allows for intermittent leave, which may include a few hours a week for treatment or a doctor visit. So as an example, an employee with treatment every other Thursday can request FMLA leave every other Thursday afternoon and even Friday if needed to recuperate if all your sick time is were used up. So with FMLA, your job will be protected for up to 12 weeks worth of time. It's an excellent benefit for someone who has used all their sick time and they're worried about losing their job or being threatened by a supervisor for excessive absences. Also check your state laws, as many state laws now have paid or protected leave policies, even if you don't qualify for FMLA. So with the ADA, you can only request benefits such as accommodations for yourself. But under FMLA, time off can be requested to care for yourself or a family member, such as a spouse or child. If your FMLA protected time off, the 12-week period I mentioned, is used up, and you think you may be able to return to work shortly, but not just yet, additional time off may be requested as a reasonable accommodation under the ADA. So the two laws work together. And also, if you work for a smaller company with less than 50 employees, so don't qualify for FMLA, time off for treatment can be requested as a reasonable accommodation under the ADA. Again, the requests have to be reasonable. There's no set guidelines, and what is reasonable is determined on a case-by-case basis. I also want to briefly discuss disclosure under the ADA and as it relates to discrimination. Disclosure is a very personal choice, and you have the right to determine who and under what circumstances you want to disclose your health issues. And I always urge caution when disclosing to coworkers and supervisors. Under the ADA, there are three distinct disclosure phases. The first is pre-employment, or while applying and interviewing for jobs. And during this period, employers can't ask any direct health or disability questions. They can't ask if you're disabled, although they can ask if you can perform the duties of the job. I usually suggest that if someone needs an accommodation, they first get the job and then request the accommodation. There's no time limit. You can request an accommodation as soon as you start work. Next is the pre-employment job offer. So following a job offer, an employer can condition that offer on your passing a required medical exam, but only if all entering employees for that job category have to take the exam. So in other words, certain people can't be singled out. And during this period, employers can ask you to complete medical questionnaires or have a medical exam, and you have to be truthful in responding. An employer can't revoke a job offer because of information about your disability as long as you can perform the essential functions of the job, with or without an accommodation. But they can renege on the job offer if you provide false information during this phase. So truthfulness is important. Very few employers actually make job offers with a medical review, and often it's for jobs that require public safety, such as bus drivers or flight attendants. So once you are working, your employer can't require that you take a medical examination or ask questions about your health unless they're job-related and necessary for the conduct of your employer's business. So again, employees and jobs that involve public safety have more job-related inquiries than, say, somebody that works in an office. So my general advice is to disclose when required, and this would be if you need an ADA accommodation or time off under FMLA. Often coworkers and supervisors are not your friends, and they become concerned about how your illness will affect their own job performance, such as a supervisor who needs to make sure you complete a project or make a quota if you work in sales. And if you must disclose for an accommodation or for FMLA, go to Human Resources. They understand these laws that protect you, and they understand what their responsibilities are. Other fellow employees and even supervisors and managers don't always understand these laws. And often an employee will ask their supervisor for an accommodation, and the reply will be, oh, we don't do that, or that's not possible, only because they don't understand your rights under the law. So even with all these protections, discrimination does exist. If someone is working and believes they're being treated unfairly, first try to resolve through Human Resources. Human Resources employees are trained in these laws, and they should understand your rights and try to help you resolve. If the concern remains unresolved, the person can file a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which enforces the ADA. And it generally must be filed within 180 days, but again, that varies by state law. But a person should act quickly. The EEOC will investigate the complaint and determine if it has merit and may conduct a hearing if they believe there was discrimination. An EEOC complaint will provide a right to sue letter so that you can file a court case under the ADA if they find that your case has merit. And again, this is an area in which I suggest you check your state laws. For example, in New York, our city and state human rights laws mirror the ADA, including reasonable accommodations, but apply to employers with four or more employees, so offers protection to a broader group of people. But if you feel there is discrimination, I urge you to talk to a lawyer before taking any legal steps so you fully understand your rights and responsibilities as the laws are complicated. Even with these protections I've discussed, there are times when a person needs to take time off from work. This could be short-term or longer for surgery or due to side effects from their treatment or illness. And the most common concern I hear are regarding health insurance and continuation of income, so I want to briefly address these. As I discussed, FMLA requires that your employer maintain and pay for health insurance for 12 weeks. Some employers expand on this, so make sure to talk to HR. If a person can't return to work, receives a notice of termination, they have a right under a law called COBRA to continue their health insurance for themselves and anyone in their family that's covered for at least 18 months. And this applies to employers with 20 or more employees, but also check your state law. In New York, we have a state COBRA law that actually allows for COBRA for 3 years for employers with 4 or more employees. So important to know what your state provides. With COBRA, you now have to pay the full premium with no employer contribution, but you do get to pay at the lower group rate. And if you're approved for Social Security disability, COBRA can be extended to 29 months. So lots of variations with COBRA. But the rules regarding COBRA are complicated. So again, make sure to speak to an attorney if you believe you're eligible for COBRA. As for income replacement, there may be a number of options. 5 states require employers to offer short-term disability protection. Although the benefit is often much less than salary and not a little livable wage, and many employers offer private short-term disability plans, which are generally for 26 weeks and pay a percentage of income. So if you can't return to work, you may also, after that 26-week period, you may also have a long-term disability policy. So important to check your benefits to see what's available to you. There's also the option of applying for Social Security disability benefits, and there's 2 types of Social Security, Social Security disability and SSI. Both are based on an applicant's inability to work, not just at their particular job, but in any capacity. So you have to establish that you can't perform the same work as before or other types of work. And you also have to show that it's likely that the disability is expected to last for at least 1 year. SSDI eligibility is based on one's work history, and there have to be sufficient work credits, and that will determine the amount. And I think right now the maximum SSDI is close to $3,000, might even be a bit more. But for someone without a work history, SSI may be available, but that has income and resource limits. An applicant can't have resources or money in the bank of over $2,000 for a single person or $3,000 for a couple. SSDI has a 26-week wait period from the onset of disability to the start of benefits. SSI has no wait period. And the maximum SSI benefit is about $850, although some states like New York do supplement that amount. So for both LTD and long-term disability and SSD, it's important to talk with your doctor to make sure that they will certify that you're unable to work as a result of your cancer diagnosis. And I just want to mention that there are special Social Security programs which can allow for an expedited approval, and many cancer diagnoses are included. And a person can apply for SSD online, and you can open an account on the SSA.gov site to see if you qualify and what your monthly payment would be. I know this is a lot of information, and I encourage listeners to take the time to educate themselves about these laws and their state laws that do offer protection, and seek out resources such as Cancer Care to have a better understanding of your rights and responsibilities. There's many resources out there, including a National Cancer Legal Service Network, and they have a website where you can see what services are available. There's a group of attorneys like myself who offer free legal advice to cancer patients, and that's nclsn.org. And I also want to mention, since it's coming up, there's an organization, Cancer and Careers. They're terrific, and they have an annual virtual conference on employment. I think this year it's going to be on June 27th. Excellent conference that talks in depth about all of the laws that I've mentioned, and definitely worth checking out. Thank you. I'm going to turn it back to Dr. Messner.
I just want to thank Ms. Wolf for just an extremely wonderful and comprehensive, stellar presentation on legal rights in the workplace. And I know there'll be lots of questions for during the Q&A, and now we're going to move on to our next speaker. And our next speaker is Ms. Kathleen Nugent, psychology social worker, senior director of regional programs at Cancer Care. Tips for creating, her topics will be tips for creating a plan to continue working, the importance of self-advocacy, Cancer Care's free national programs and services, Cancer Care's Hope Line, and website. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Nugent.
Thank you, Carolyn. As Carolyn mentioned, I am the oncology social worker at Cancer Care and the senior director of regional programs. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops, publications, and limited financial assistance. And all of our services are free. The diagnosis of cancer can be devastating. One's life is suddenly changed. The diagnosis can present physical, practical, financial, and emotional challenges. Patients often feel alone and experience a sense of loss of control. Cancer presents a crisis in the life of the patient and the family. Everyone handles a cancer diagnosis differently. There are no one right way to handle it. How have you dealt with crisis in your life in the past? What has worked for you and what has not worked? What are your strengths? Taking a look at the past crisis in your life and how you utilized your coping skills at the time can be very helpful in dealing with your cancer crisis now. Focus on what you can do rather than what you are not able to do. Use those strengths and successful past strategies. It's important also to examine your support system. Who can you turn to for support? Is it a family member, friend, coworker? Look at the role each person has in your life and how they may be able to assist you with workplace decisions and other practical concerns. Each person can play a role in your recovery. You may also consider reaching out to one of the many cancer support organizations like Cancer Care to speak to a professional oncology social worker who can provide support and guidance throughout your cancer journey. Working during your cancer treatment and returning to work after completing treatment can be one of these challenges. Remember that cancer can have a profound life-changing effect. A new normal is created. I have seen many cancer patients throughout my career rush back into the workplace expecting everything to be the same. Many are surprised and disappointed. Many find that their priorities have changed. Take it slow. Listen to your body. You may have to adjust your pace to work with your new normal. Evaluate your readiness to work. Can you work part-time or full-time? If you can manage part-time, what kinds of accommodations need to be made? Can you work remotely? Once you've decided to go back to work part-time or full-time, work out a schedule with your employer. Here are a few tips to help you face the challenges of the workplace. Discuss your work plan with your doctor and your healthcare team. If you need to work during treatments, share this information with your doctor. Maybe your treatment protocol and schedule can be adjusted to accommodate your workplace needs. Discuss with your medical team any side effects you may have as a result of your treatment. How can you manage these side effects while working? Your medical team can be very helpful in providing useful information and support with this issue. Who to tell about your diagnosis? It depends on your individual comfort level and your own personal experience at work. Who are you comfortable telling and who can provide support? You should definitely speak to human resources to learn about your company's policies. HR can be helpful to you in how to communicate with others at your workplace. As mentioned earlier, slow your pace, take work breaks, set priorities, take care of one responsibility at a time rather than multitasking. Set attainable goals. Set small goals at first to help make the adjustment back to the workplace easier. Write down your priorities and goals and cross them out as you accomplish each goal. Smaller goals can be more attainable. Delegate whenever possible. And remember, work can be a positive distraction and can help to give you a better sense of control in your life. As mentioned earlier, speaking to a professional social worker can be helpful during your adjustment back into the workplace. Support around survivorship issues is essential in order for people to thrive in their lives and workplace post-treatment. And Cancer Care can help guide and support patients through many of these issues. If you're interested in learning more about our free services, I encourage you to call Cancer Care's National Hope Line at 1-800-813-813. 4673 and speak to one of our oncology social workers. Our oncology-trained social workers can be very helpful in setting an action plan and managing your new normal. Our social workers can also provide resources to assess clinical trials, financial assistance, and potential supports local to you. You can also explore all of our services on our website, which is www.cancercare.org. The cancer experience often leaves us feeling alone. I would like to emphasize that you're not alone. Cancer Care is here for you. We provide help and hope to all cancer patients. Lastly, celebrate your strengths. Through the cancer journey, patients and caregivers face day-to-day challenges and discover new strengths and courage. Acknowledge this and celebrate. Be good to yourself. I will end by sharing a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson. "The hero is no braver than an ordinary man, but he is braver 5 minutes longer." Thank you, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Oh, thank you so much, Kathy. That was just a wonderful presentation, Stella, and really provided our participants with lots of information. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. So now we're going to move on to the question and answer period. And I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for online questions. Bella?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
The first question is for Ms. Wolf. I recently took FMLA, and when I was preparing to return, my manager told me he will be reducing my hours. I have been back at work and can't help but feel like this is because I took time off, but how can I prove that?
So that's a good question. You know, and again, work changes can be made for legitimate business reasons. Your employer can't do this because you had requested time off or had requested an accommodation. Some of the things that I'll suggest to people is, you know, depending on the size of your employer, what is your seniority? Are there other people who have also had their hours reduced? You know, look at all these factors to see if you were singled out as opposed to this being something that was being done across the board for all employees. And so to look at that and then, you know, again, talk to an attorney, an employment attorney. There is a national organization called NELA, the National Employment Lawyers Association, and they do offer a free consult as well. And they'll go through some of these factors that you can look at to see if, you know, it signals that you were being treated unfairly as a result of your cancer diagnosis.
And this question for Ms. Wolf, what should current cancer patients be prepared for under the current presidential administration in regards to the changes to ADA, FMLA, et cetera?
So I wish, it's a good question, and I don't have all the answers, but the only thing I can say right now is there have not been any changes. So right now the laws are still solid. The one thing that has changed is the mandate for all federal workers to return to the workplace. So anybody that works in the federal sector, you know, still has a right to an accommodation. So if you've been ordered back to work 5 days a week and that interferes with either your treatment plan or your side effects from your illness prevent you from working 5 days a week, you know, follow the steps that I talked about in terms of asking for an accommodation. But that's as far as I can go. The rest of it really is, you know, we'll have to see. But nothing's changed as of yet.
And then another question for, how do you communicate ADA or FMLA accommodations to a future employer when seeking a new job?
So my suggestion is to get the job. have it based only on your qualifications. There's a lot of people that, you know, apply for jobs these days, and when you're competing with a lot of other people, even though employers aren't allowed to take into consideration your need for an accommodation, they often do. And when they do and you don't get the job, it's often hard to prove. So my advice is get the job. Once you have the job and you've started work, then reach out to, if there's human resources, reach out to human resources about what your accommodation need may be. So my suggestion, yes, is to get the job first and then communicate about your accommodation needs.
And that's really important. That's very important to know that for everybody on the call. And then this, would you just repeat the name of the cancer lawyer group mentioned?
I mentioned the National Employment Lawyers Association. It's NELA, N-E-L-A. You can Google them, and they do offer a free 30-minute consultation. And then I also mentioned Cancer and Careers, which you can find at cancerandcareers.org, and you can register for their upcoming webinar on employment rights for people with cancer. Great organization.
And actually, we will be sending a SurveyMonkey in a week, and that will include, it's an evaluation of the program, but it will also include any resources that we mentioned. So the ones that Ms. Wolf mentioned, those will be mentioned as well. And then a question for Dr. Ritchie, in terms of if you could say a little bit more about the people that you work with who have cancer and how you counsel them in terms of their their return to work.
I'm sorry, how you, say that one more time?
How you prepare them as they return to work.
I just could not understand. I'm so sorry. Say it one more time for me.
Say a bit more about the patients that you work with who are returning to work, how you prepare them in their return to work.
I'm so sorry. Yes, how I prepare them for their return to work. So oftentimes at the end of a treatment plan, I think it's very important to ask your provider how long are these symptoms expected to linger? And oftentimes what I say is, look, you didn't develop this level of fatigue or whatever overnight. It's going to take a little bit of time. And so one of the simplest things I recommend when patients are going back to work is, I said, return on a Thursday. Don't return on a Monday. Return on a Thursday. So then you can work for a couple of days and then automatically have a break that is built in, and you'll have a better idea of kind of how you're going to feel. Oftentimes when patients return back to work, they go Monday, and then it's a full work week, and it's just too much. Sometimes it's emotionally too much as well if they've been off work. So one of the biggest tips I give everyone is to return, you know, Wednesday or Thursday, where your work week is only a couple of days, and then you automatically have a break.
Excellent. Thank you. And then a question, Ms. Wolf, my employee will be in the hospital due to cancer-related surgery. Is it appropriate to visit her while she is recovering?
I'm sorry, ask that one more time, Caroline. Caroline, I missed a little bit of it.
My employee will be in the hospital due to cancer-related surgery. Is it appropriate to visit her while she is recovering?
There's no laws that prohibit that. You know, it really depends on, I guess, your relationship with the employee. Certainly isn't inappropriate or not allowed under the laws. Interestingly, the ADA doesn't allow an employer to ask health-related questions of an employee. You know, say to somebody, you're not looking well today, or you lost some weight. You know, do you have health issues? Do you need an accommodation? As I mentioned before, the burden is on the employee to come forward. But, you know, depending on your relationship with the employee, by all means, if you have that type of relationship where you want to visit them, I certainly don't see why not. There's no laws that prohibit that. If I were, you know, in that situation, I think I'd welcome a visit from my employer.
Excellent. Thank you. And a question for Dr. Ritchie. What kind of records, either medical or work-related, should patients keep while going through cancer treatment?
Oh, I definitely think that it's a good idea to basically keep a diary. And I tell my patients that, you know, when you get home after your visit, if you think of other questions, go ahead and write them down, and then bring that with you. We actually give our patients a diary to sort of start to keep all of these records straight. It's always a good time to sort of get your medical history straight. When did you have biopsies? When did you have surgery or radiation or chemotherapy? But more importantly for your provider, it's important to know how you're feeling between those visits. And also, don't even hesitate to call, even if it's not your visit time. A lot of times I have patients that are like, well, this is happening, but I didn't want to bother you. No, no, no. That's exactly what we're here for, and we need to know so we can help you manage any symptoms you might be having. But keeping a record of just that, the daily symptoms, things that you can eat, things that you can't eat, it's really more about a diary. But as you know, you have access to all of your health records. They're now in electronic medical records, and there are patient portals. So as far as like just sort of keeping a folder of paper, that's not as necessary anymore. But just make sure you do sign up for those patient portals, whether it's the hospital or the office. Sometimes those are different systems, but sign up for those patient portals so you always have access to labs and studies and visits.
Could you also,
Carolyn, it's Deborah. Could I add something to that?
Please do, yes.
Yeah, the advice about the diary is wonderful, but I just want to add that if you're contemplating applying for any kind of disability benefit, whether it be private or Social Security, remember that they're going to get a copy of your records and they're going to see these records and they're going to base your approval on these records. So make sure you tell your doctor everything that's going on with you. You know,
yes.
Some people will come in today and say, oh, I feel okay today, but okay is relative. You know, you want to be very specific about any side effects, any symptoms, and have that in your medical record to support your need for disability benefits if it ever is required. So just be very thorough about how you're feeling and make sure that also gets put into your medical record. And remember that, you know, there'll be another set of eyes looking at that record. So you just, you know, you want to be cautious about what you say.
It's such a good point, because oftentimes patients want to, you know, have a strong face for the doctor and don't necessarily reveal everything that they're actually feeling. So that's a very good point. Just be open and honest.
Yep. Dr. Ritchie, could you also comment on the survivorship care plan? So people have, they know, there's a listing of all the medications they took, because when they complete their treatment, and they go back to their family doctor or other doctors, they may not be as familiar with the drugs that they took and the side effects of those drugs and long-term effects. So if you could comment on that as well.
Oh, as far as the survivorship is concerned, absolutely. And so at the end of your treatment, you should be given basically a summary of everything that was involved in your treatment, so that first of all, you have it for your records, and second of all, you can share that with any of your other physicians. And I know our practice, we are always working with those primary care providers, and if they have any questions or concerns, that they are more than willing to give us a call and ask. But oftentimes in this care, the survivorship plan, or even in regular notes that the oncologist has, it will list sort of the long-term side effects that need to be monitored, you know, as far as maybe particular labs or scans or studies. I know we keep patients throughout their surveillance until their surveillance is complete, and then they are sort of released from the clinic and go back to their primary care providers. But, you know, I always say the burden of once you've had a cancer diagnosis, that your oncologist, really the burden as you go forward is to make sure any new symptoms are not related to your cancer. So you always have your oncologist that you can go back to if you're worried.
Excellent. Thank you. And a question for Ms. Nugent. This is a really important one. Work does provide meaning in our lives. I am a breast cancer survivor. I retired a bit early to take it easy after my diagnosis. I feel lost a little bit of my identity when I stopped working. What hobbies, activities can you recommend to fill my day? I find myself sitting at home feeling bored nowadays. Could you comment on that?
Sure. Yeah, I think just to kind of piggyback on what the others were saying about journaling too, journaling is always a wonderful thing, not only for the medical records, but also I think we have to focus on the things that we can do. So in retirement and we stop working, what are our connections? What can we do? Is there things in the community that might be something that we want to get involved with? Volunteering. Doing something that maybe you've thought about in the past and never had the opportunity to do, such as working in a florist or helping out in the garden, something like that. But I also believe that, you know, finding what are the things that make one feel happy, you know, even if it's just little things, being able to walk outside, being able to be with friends, connecting with others. Everybody has their individual interests, so it's hard to say what, you know, I can't tell you what you should or shouldn't do, but I think journaling is a wonderful thing, keeping a diary, not only of the feelings of feeling that you're not 100%, we can't be positive all the time, so we jot those down too, but also what are the things that we're happy about, and it could be just, you know, looking out the window and seeing the birds. I think we have to focus on those kind of things, things that we can do now that's important. And the little things that make us smile. And I think really connecting with others is really very, very important. Even when we stop working for whatever reason, trying to connect in the community is important, if at all possible.
Well, thank you so much. I have to say this has been a phenomenal program. We've done this program in the past, but today I think some of the questions were terrific. Our speakers were terrific. It's just a wonderful synergy. I'm going to ask each of our speakers to provide a takeaway from today's program. I'm going to start with Dr. Ritchie, and then Ms. Wolf, and then Ms. Nugent. So we'll start with Dr. Ritchie. Just a takeaway, just a minute or two takeaway that you'd like people to take away from today's program.
Yeah, sure. I think I can give you three words, communicate, communicate, and communicate. That's the most important thing, is that you talk to your providers and let them know what you need, what your goals are, and how you are feeling. They cannot help you unless you tell them what is going on, and I think you will be surprised at the modifications and things that can be made for you within your treatment plan.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. And Ms. Wolf.
I think my words of advice, my final takeaway would be, you know, number one, to make sure that you understand the benefits offered by your employer. So ask for that summary plan description, look through it, and understand what your employer offers in terms of protected time off as well as, supplemental pay while you're taking time off. And then the other is also to take the time to understand the laws that I've talked about, the ADA particularly and FMLA, as well as your state laws. These are laws that protect you, and you have rights, and your employer has responsibilities. And so it's important to be armed with this knowledge whenever you're thinking of asking for an accommodation or time off.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you. And Ms. Nugent?
I would say be kind to yourself. Listen to your body. as the others have said, ask questions of your employer and your doctor, and connect with your community too. Don't be afraid to ask, and don't be afraid to reach out to some of the, you know, cancer care and some of the other organizations that can provide support to you. And blessings to everyone, and stay well.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And I really want to thank all of our speakers and all of our participants on the call today. I do want to make a few comments, however, before we close the program. For many of you, some of you, we have a lot of people on the call, so we couldn't take everyone's question. So for those of you who got to ask a question, please take your question back to the healthcare team or an attorney and ask them the question. They probably have the most about you, and they can address your question because they do have access to your records. And also, you also have learned a lot from today's program. And for those of you who are in queue and didn't get to ask your question of your healthcare team. Good to start with them. And then the other resources that we've given you as well. And lastly, we've noticed that that somehow during the week, most people are able to reach their healthcare team. But evenings and weekends and holidays seem to be challenging often to get someone. So be sure you check with your healthcare team in terms of, you know, what number to use to call them evenings, weekends, and holidays. And lastly, as has been said by a number of our speakers, you're not alone. Because Nugent said it most eloquently, you're not alone. You're now part of a community of support, both from Cancer Care and many other organizations. And we'll be providing all those resources to all of you, at the in the Survey Monthly evaluation. So you'll be hearing, you'll be getting the resources for the legal resources and other resources that would be useful to you. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.